Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me, because this is such a great opportunity for us to have wonderful conversations about topics that make such a huge difference in your life. And you're going to find that today's conversation is so profound, and you'll be so glad you've been tuning in here. And I just want to remind everyone that if you have not yet gone to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, please do so, because once you opt in there, you get not only special reports, but my radio shows get forwarded to you, and you just keep getting educated. And another way to stay educated is to go to my Facebook page, which is also What Women Must Know, because I post things on a daily basis, and it's a great way to just keep learning, growing, healing, and getting empowered. I always like to say that this show is about empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. And today we're going to be talking about some profound ways to support your health and well-being. We're going to be talking about the healing power of curcumin. And we'll be explaining what that is and the benefits. And the best person to do that is my guest today, who is Dr. A.J. Goyal. He is a PhD. He is the Director of Epigenetics, Cancer Prevention, and Cancer Genomics at Baylor University Medical Center in Texas. Now, Dr. Goyal has spent 20 years researching cancer and has been the lead author or contributor to over 100 scientific articles, published in peer-reviewed international journals, and several book chapters. He is currently researching the prevention of gastrointestinal cancers using integrative and alternative approaches, including botanicals. Two of the primary botanicals he is investigating are curcumin from turmeric and boswellia. And he published a clinical trial on a major depressive disorder shown that a highly potent curcumin extract equaled the effects of the prescription drug Prozac without the adverse effects. And his studies on rheumatoid arthritis and osteoarthritis showed potent botanicals to be better for relieving pain and lowering joint line tenderness than the commonly prescribed prescription medications. And in another recent cancer study, Dr. Goyal shows the benefits of combining chemotherapy with a special form of highly absorbable curcumin to improve treatment. The curcumin not only sensitized the cancer cells to the effects, but also protected healthy cells. And last but not least, I just want to say that Dr. Goyal's research has applications for other diseases at the cellular level. Inflammation is the cause of virtually every disease state in the body. And his research with depression, arthritis, shows that targeting inflammation has huge benefits for people with these conditions. So this is such an exciting interview, because we're going to be learning about one of the most powerful healing botanicals that has been researched for many, many decades, but now the latest research is showing even more impressive results. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Dr. A.J. Goyal to the show today.
Hello. Thanks, Cheryl. Thanks for having me on the show, and I'm really delighted and honored to be on this show, and I'm looking forward to our discussion.
Well, we were talking a little bit before we started the interview, and I wanted to just say how impressed I was with your commitment to researching the effects of these botanicals. That was not necessarily an easy thing to do in the beginning. And you know, Dr. Goyal, you're really breaking so much ground and introducing possibilities into the traditional medical field and benefiting everyone. So let's just start with at the very beginning. When we talk about curcumin, because we'll talk about curcumin a lot today, can you explain what that is exactly?
Well, I think that's a very important question, because I see that all the time, that people sometimes are confused with the term. So what is curcumin? So curcumin is essentially the active principle or the active medicine in the spice turmeric. So if you've seen, if you know the spice turmeric, so it mostly comes from Southeast Asia. Mostly turmeric is grown in India and other parts of Southeast Asia. So that's a spice which people use for cooking. So if you have seen any Indian dish or Indian curry, you'll see that the color of all curry powders is yellow. And that yellow color actually comes from curcumin. So if you take a turmeric root and we ground it up and we extract curcumin and we do the extraction, we can extract curcumin out of that spice. So turmeric is the spice which we use for cooking, which is flavorful, which is colorful, which has a great taste. But within that, anywhere between 2 to 4% of all turmeric is curcumin. So curcumin is a natural medicine which is present in turmeric.
So the question that that I have, you know, turmeric is getting very popular. I'm seeing teas made with it, drinks made with it. Everyone is really getting into turmeric. Is turmeric on its own therapeutic?
The answer is yes. So turmeric is, I just told you, so turmeric is not only just a spice, but it has healing components. And turmeric is composed of many, many different actives in it. But whenever we talk about healing powers of turmeric, we focus mostly on curcumin because curcumin is probably the most abundant active medicine in turmeric. But besides curcumin, there are a few other actives also in turmeric, but those are present at much, much lower concentrations or much more lower frequencies, and there's not that much science done on it. So that's why most of the research so far in the last 2, 3, 4 decades has been focused on curcumin because curcumin is the most abundant, anywhere between 2 to 4%, like I said before, depending upon what part of the world turmeric is grown, because the content of curcumin varies on the cultivation conditions, the soil, and all of that. But still, I think the most active principle in turmeric is curcumin, but there are other actives in there, and we don't fully understand that maybe there is a synergistic component, a synergistic efficacy between curcumin and these other actives which are present in turmeric at much, much lower concentrations. So the answer is yes, turmeric on its own is therapeutic, but it depends how much turmeric you can be using. So if you're living in India, you're consuming 3 meals a day, and every meal is yellow in color. So you probably, from the day you're born, or at least you turn 1 or 2 once you start eating regular meals, so you're virtually consuming 3 meals a day loaded with turmeric, and you that way you get enough beneficial or health benefits of turmeric because you always have some amount of curcumin and other actives in your bloodstream. But if you're living in the Western countries like we are here in the U.S., consuming turmeric probably may not be the best choice because you're not going to get enough amount of curcumin and other actives. So depending on the context, so turmeric by itself is effective, but if we're not going to consume turmeric enough, then probably using curcumin as a supplement is probably a much more smarter choice.
Okay, that's great. That helps a lot to clarify. And I think, you know, depending if someone is wanting to use it for a therapeutic benefit, then you want a more potent source of the active ingredients, curcumin. But I think it's a great idea. I've started putting turmeric in my cooking now and my soups. And
absolutely. Yeah, I recommend this to a lot of people here because, like I said before, it's depending upon everybody's own taste. And it's not the diet's the most difficult things to change. You know, we can adopt certain diets for a certain period of time, but it's very difficult to maintain those diets. So I think if we are looking for any therapeutic or preventative potential, it is good to use turmeric as much as we can, like you are doing on your salads or your eggs. And I know people use it on all different kinds of dishes, which is good because it adds color, it adds taste. But on top of that, if you're not using it enough, maybe it is a good idea to use some sort of curcumin supplement along with.
So let's talk about cancer because this is an area of your research, and I think we need to start at the beginning based on your research and the work you've been doing and understanding of some of the drivers of cancer. What do we need to know as far as those drivers that contribute to the development of cancer?
Yes, I think that's a very important question, and I would like to clarify, compared to what we thought all along until probably last 10 or 15 years, I think cancer was always believed to be a disease which is purely genetic. And when I say genetic, I think most of the people who are not in the scientific field, they tend to confuse the word genetic with hereditary. So what I'm trying to say is that people thought mostly that if somebody in their family had cancer and they could remember like a generation or two before, a grandpa or grandma or somebody else in the family had cancer, they think, oh, I was going to get cancer because this cancer runs in the family. So I think there's a difference. So cancers which run in the family are typically not genetic. Genetic means anything to do with genes. So cancers which run in the families are called hereditary cancers. Now, genes do play a role. We think we understand that some of the triggers of cancers, but we fully still do not understand what leads to cancers. So to simplify it, I think about 2 to 5%, and I would lean more towards the lower number, anywhere between 2 to 3% of all cancers are driven in a hereditary fashion. What that means is that those individuals are just unfortunate that their genome or their genetic makeup, there's something wrong with one or two or more genes which put them at a higher risk for getting cancer. So really we can't do much because it's just unfortunate that some of those bad genes are passed on generation to generation. But the good news is that happens very rarely. Only 2 to 3% of the people get hereditary cancer. So most other cancers, 95%+ of cancers, typically we call them sporadic, which means they just happen on their own, or we call them acquired, means they just acquire as we grow older. So most cancers now we learn are part of the aging process. As we get older, we're going to get some of these cancers, and that is primarily dictated by our diets, lifestyles, and the environments we live in. Now, we cannot pin it down to one particular thing, but I think that's the sense currently that things we do from the day we are born, the kinds of diets we consume or things we don't consume, the environments we live in, the exercise we do or we don't do, smoking, alcohol, tobacco, so forth. So there's so many of these factors which can put us at risk for getting these cancers, and it is just a normal process of aging, and we can get that. So, but the good news is, again, that since we know that it is not that we inherited some bad genes, so 95%+ of the people can really prevent or reduce their risk for cancer if they maintain good lifestyles, they consume good diets, and they try their best to live in good environments and do all the right things. So this is the good news, because we don't need to think that cancer is our destiny because grandma or grandpa or somebody else in the family had cancer, so I was going to get it. So now we fully understand that hereditary cancers are super rare, and our risk for cancer is to a quite large extent dependent upon the diets and lifestyles we choose to live with.
So it's really important for people to hear that we've created this epidemic of cancer due to the tremendous amount of toxins that we are exposed to in our environment, to the lack of nutrition because we eat foods that are either denatured in some way or processed and have too many chemicals in them. And we know that we've also operated out of a life that generates a lot of stress, lack of sleep, and all the other lifestyle factors that we know contribute. So these are all modifiable dynamics. We, you know, the more we're aware, we can purify our water, we can get an air purifier in our home, we can eat organic food, and we can take some targeted supplementation that is known to address some of these factors that predispose us to chronic illness, like inflammation. So I think we really need to talk about inflammation as a major player in all chronic illnesses, really.
Absolutely. I think you said it very correctly. And I think there's absolutely no doubt that inflammation plays a huge role. And the triggers for inflammation could be many different ones. And when we talk about inflammation, I would like to clarify, and I think a lot of people tend to confuse inflammation also. There are two kinds of inflammation we talk about. So one is something we call acute inflammation. So acute inflammation is And the other kind is chronic inflammation. So when we talk about acute inflammation, that refers to any sort of inflammation which happens as a result of falling down, or we bruised ourselves, we fell down, or we hurt ourselves while running, or we had a neck or a bruise or something, and you see localized swelling or redness or pain. So that's something is acute inflammation. So that's really not the trouble, because we have wonderful drugs out there which can help mitigate that pain, reduce that pain. You take that pill for a day or two or three, as long as you need, the redness goes away, the swelling goes away, and you're back healthy. So back to being healthy. So that is not a problem. But the problem is chronic inflammation. So what that means is chronic inflammation is one for which we really do not have these symptoms of, you know, redness or bruise or pain or anything. So chronic inflammation is something which we have to be worried about, and most of us, since there are no symptoms, we don't recognize. But like we said before, depending upon the diets we choose, depending upon you very correctly mentioned that the chemicals we unknowingly consume when we consume different foods and modified processed foods and so forth. So whenever we eat, consume, live in these environments, all of these things triggers low levels of chronic inflammation, which is completely non-symptomatic. So we really don't feel it. We eat the meal and we think we are healthy, but at some level, this inflammation has initiated. And if that inflammation goes unchecked, if it's not treated, if it is not corrected, that long-term implications of that inflammation are catastrophic, in the sense that you can have cancers and many other diseases. And now we are recognizing that virtually every single human disease we can talk about, cancer, depression, diabetes, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, there is a significant component of low levels of chronic inflammation, which was the basis of start of that disease. And if we can do something about it, if we can check that inflammation, if we can reduce or eliminate that inflammation, we can theoretically, and there's tons of scientific evidence now, that we can delay the onset of a lot of these diseases, or we can virtually prevent a lot of these diseases.
And this is where your research with curcumin comes in, because curcumin is a major player in reducing inflammation. So let's talk about your research. Let's talk about how curcumin actually directly can reduce levels of systemic inflammation.
Absolutely. So curcumin, and to the best of my knowledge, and I do this for a living, and I can tell you that, and I challenge anybody who is listening to this, that when you look at any natural botanicals out there are so many of them. You know, we're going to talk more about curcumin. There's so many others: green tea, resveratrol, you know, fish oils, omega-3s, and other things. So when you look at all of these natural ways and natural botanicals, I can challenge that probably, to the best of my scientific knowledge at least, there's no other botanical which is as potent as curcumin in reducing inflammation. So curcumin has been used in traditional systems of medicine. Some of the two of the oldest traditional systems of medicine are Chinese system of medicine and Indian Ayurvedic medicine system. So when you look at these medicines were practiced for now more than 6,000-8,000 years, you know, and turmeric or curcumin has been used for treatment of virtually every single human disease in these traditional systems of medicine for thousands of years. And the reason was, at that time we didn't have all this sophisticated science, but we knew one thing, that it is a very potent anti-inflammatory compound. So not only it fights inflammation, it is antioxidant, it has antibacterial activities. Now we recognize it is anti-cancer, it can help prevent depression. And I tell everybody when I talk about curcumin that I have yet to see, there are more than 8,000 scientific studies published right now. So one way to look that up is on PubMed, which is National Institutes of Health's scientific search engine. So if you go to pubmed.gov, I believe, and you put the word curcumin on turmeric, you will see there are more than 8,000 scientific studies. So these are not tabloid magazine articles. These are peer-reviewed scientific studies. And there's no other compound, whether natural compound or modern synthetic drug or anything, which even has probably 2,000 studies. Nothing comes close. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because this compound is a strong anti-inflammatory compound, which makes it so beautiful and so important because, just like you said, inflammation is the root cause of most chronic illnesses. And if you can keep inflammation in a check, it is not surprising that it can help with so many different diseases. So that's where my research comes in. I've been studying curcumin for a long time, and I've shown over the years that it is a very potent anti-inflammatory compound. It helps with cancer prevention. It helps with cancer treatment. I'm involved in different clinical trials and other studies on patients who have Alzheimer's, patients who have depression, with Parkinson's, with diabetes, you name it. And I'm part of several advisory boards. I can tell you there is not one human disease for which curcumin has not been tried, and there is not one single study which has shown that curcumin does not work in a specific condition. The degree of efficacy may vary, but it really works everywhere, which makes it very interesting, but at the same time, a lot of my scientific colleagues question because they're used to learning that there should be one drug, one disease, and that paradigm doesn't work here because this magical or this beautiful natural medicine works in every condition because it can fight inflammation, and if you can control that, you can virtually have beneficial effects in every single disease.
So that's why it's so profound. It's ubiquitous in its effects. I mean, if inflammation is a driver, is one of the drivers, I would say inflammation
yes.
and state of stress, they really work hand in hand and they contribute to each other, are the major drivers. Here we have this renowned ancient spice, and what we've been able to do is, you know, with modern technology, is get the active components of turmeric that are so powerful, and make them as a supplement. So the first question I want to ask, I'm sure people who are listening are asking this question: should everyone be taking a curcumin supplement as part of a preventative protocol for their health?
Yes, I think this is a very important question, and I get asked this question often, and my answer is yes. And the reason I say yes, for many different reasons, and I would like to very much clarify that I have no conflicts of interest. You know, I have no personal business interest here, and this is purely because of scientific evidence, what is out there. And this is more important, yes, for people who don't live in India or that part of the world where people are consuming enough turmeric on a daily basis in their meals, because those individuals probably don't need to worry about it because they're already consuming on an average about 100 milligrams of curcumin in each meal, which adds up to about 200 to 300 milligrams of curcumin. They consume over three meals, and they do that every single day for most of their adult life, during their childhood. So other than that, people who don't consume typical Indian meal on an everyday basis, I think it is a wonderful idea. And I cannot tell, that's a difficult question, because sometimes people ask me, how do you know by taking this we prevented something? You know, but that's a very difficult thing. Mm-hmm. All I can tell you is that there's tons of epidemiological evidence there that people in India, for example, and that was one of the triggers when I began looking for my research interest about 20 years ago. I chose to work on curcumin because I did a very systematic research to find what should be my next topic of research for my next phase of my life, and I chose turmeric because it was very fascinating to me at that time. When I look at the disease incidence across the globe, there was such a clear disparity between different parts of the world. You know, certain diseases being more prevalent in Western world, while they were almost non-existent in Southeast Asia and so forth. And that was very puzzling to me. So the first thing which comes to mind, are there genetic differences between people who live in India versus U.S.? And the answer is no. We may look a little bit different, but on a genetic level, we all as human race are 99.99999% identical. So really, there's no genetic basis to that. Then what is different between people living in different parts of the world? It's the diets and the lifestyles we all choose to live with. And when I look at disease incidence in India, and I'm going to give you some numbers here, that when I work on cancer, and that I've been doing that for a long time now, when I look at cancer incidence in India, you know, I work mostly on colorectal cancer, which is a very, very common cancer in the U.S., India has 10 to 15 times, not percent, 10 to 15 fold lower colorectal cancer compared to U.S. That's huge.
Yeah.
When we talk about breast cancer, 5 to 10 times lower breast cancer in India than U.S. You look at virtually every single cancer you can look at, and these data are put out by CDC every single year, and anybody is welcome to look at these numbers. So there's repeatedly, year after year, these stats come out showing that some of these diseases are 5, 10, 20-fold lower in India compared to Alzheimer's, almost non-existent in India compared to here. So I began to look at why so, and one thing which comes to mind is the diets. Even a person who cannot afford a good meal in India, they're still eating a typical Indian meal, yellow in color, and it is because of curcumin and probably many other spices. I don't want to make it look like it's all because of curcumin, but the point being that are there certain dietary ingredients or components which probably afford this sort of natural prevention from so many diseases? And the answer was curcumin.
So that leads me to the next question. If someone who is in the process of dealing with cancer, so they have a diagnosis of cancer. I mean, there, you know, could be any type of cancer.
Sure.
Would taking a curcumin supplement be advised? Would it be effective? Will it be helpful for anyone who is dealing with a cancer protocol, be it chemotherapy or radiation, or someone who is choosing to find more alternative approaches?
Yes, I think that's, again, a very important question, and I think I missed part of your previous question's answer. The answer was, should everybody consider taking a curcumin supplement for preventing disease? The answer is yes. Those who do not have any disease, cancer or anything else, and we are adults, and I think just like we take a multivitamin pill or some other supplement on a daily basis, I think one should strongly consider a curcumin supplements as a part of their daily health, and I think that's very important. Now, going back to your specific question here, the patients who are unfortunate, they have some sort of cancer, should they consider taking curcumin? The answer is absolutely yes. But before I go further into that, I would strongly urge that anybody who is considering taking curcumin, before they do that, they must consult this with their physician, their oncologist, whoever is taking care of their health, to consult with them and to make sure that curcumin is safe for them. Because every patient is different. They're taking many, many different medicines and drugs. And I think it's just a matter of respect also to consult with a physician and oncologist saying, hey, I have this disease and I found this compound and I've seen all this research out there and it shows that it's pretty safe. Should I consider it? And I would tell you that some of the oncologists may not be totally familiar with curcumin and all the science behind it, but if they are educated or if they're shown some evidence, I will say 9 out of 10 times they would agree, because there's so much evidence out there that curcumin is very much beneficial in patients who already have cancer. So they should consider taking it. The other concern most oncologists or physicians would have advising against curcumin, if they're not familiar with the science behind curcumin, is the possibility of negative interaction of curcumin with whatever other medications the patient is taking. And the answer is that for the most part, and to best of my knowledge, curcumin really is extremely safe, whether you're taking any sort of chemotherapy or radiation or any other drugs, other than a very small class of drugs such as blood thinners like warfarin. So if you are taking drugs like that, then one should be a little bit more cautious. But other than that, really, it's extremely safe. You can take it with your chemo, radiation, or any other medications. But please do consult with your physician first. And I think it's absolutely, my science has shown it, my research has shown it, so many other people are investigating this. And we have repeatedly shown that patients who already have cancer, one of the troubles with patients who are on chemotherapy radiation is that, and Cheryl, you know that most patients who have cancer, whenever they're given their first chemotherapy, they respond beautifully, you know, for some period of time, but give them 6 months, a year, they stop responding, which we call it chemo resistance develop. So the tumors are smart enough, the cancer cells are smart, they stop responding to the medication you're taking, and then we don't have too many wonderful drugs out there to help these patients repeatedly. So what we have done is we have shown that patients who are non-responsive or they are become chemo-resistant, they're not responding to these treatments. If these patients take small amounts of curcumin, their tumors, their cancers begin to respond. They become sensitized to those same drugs which they were not responding to before, and these people derive benefit, then now they make the chemotherapy look better. And one of the problems with chemotherapy is it is very toxic. So we have shown data that when you, the patients who are taking chemotherapy, if they combine curcumin along with the chemo, actually it minimizes or reduces the toxicity and helps the improve the benefits of chemotherapy along with. So absolutely, those who are taking chemo or radiation, combining curcumin is definitely a very good idea. But like I said before, it should be done in consultation with their physician who is taking care of them.
So this is pretty amazing. So you have this this curcumin component that has the ability to reduce inflammation. It helps to enhance the effectiveness of chemotherapy. It helps chemotherapy to be more effective when it potentially loses its effectiveness because of the resistance. And then I would also say it's needed to help people maintain their health after their treatment, so they prevent recurrence of cancers again.
Absolutely, and I've seen, I mean, all day long I get phone calls, emails from people I've never met. I don't know where they are, and these emails and phone calls come from all parts of the world where people share their stories. You know, they tell me that at some point I told them to consider taking curcumin, and now they have tried that for 6 months, a year or two, they're completely cancer-free. Or they had a stage 4 cancer, they started considering taking curcumin, they took curcumin for a few weeks or months, and now their cancer is downstage. So I have so many wonderful experiences, and each one of these emails or phone calls makes my day, because these are real-life evidence.
Yeah.
People
yeah.
are sharing, those who I don't even know, they're telling me the wonderful benefits, which sort of support my bench research, which I do in my lab, because in my lab, we are focused on understanding how curcumin works. We are understanding the mechanisms, how curcumin works on it by itself or how it works in combination with chemotherapy. So what I do is I try to understand the science behind it. But whenever I hear real-life situations where people are utilizing it in the same context and then they tell me that it worked, it is sort of a validation of the science we are doing. So absolutely, there's so much evidence, there's so much scientific evidence and real-life evidence out there that it is a very potent chemosensitizer, it is a very potent anti-cancer agent, it is a very potent cancer preventative, it's a very potent anti-cancer agent on its own or in combination with chemotherapy.
And it sounds like we should all be getting some good lessons in making curries.
Yes, I mean, that's absolutely, so like I said before, it has been used in Indian Ayurvedic system for more than 6,000-8,000 years. But
yeah.
As humans we are, I mean, we knew that some of these herbs have potent medicinal value, but the challenge was there was not enough science behind it, you know. But that's what we have done in the last 3, 4, 5 decades, that now we have, like I said before, there are more than 8,000 studies published on curcumin. So I think we have a lot more evidence than we need. I mean, a lot of the drugs we use on a daily basis, Tylenols and or chemotherapies or anything, and I challenge you, if you look up on PubMed, there are probably 20 studies or 50 studies on any of these modern drugs we use, and for this natural botanical, there are more than 8,000 studies repeatedly validating. And when I say 8,000 studies, other than probably 5 or 10 studies, every single study has shown positive data. So that speaks volumes that how safe, and I think that's the biggest thing to me whenever I recommend it to somebody. You know, we cannot say that for any modern drug. There's not one drug, and I'm sure we all have gotten a prescription drug. We all know what happens when you go to pick up a prescription drug. They give us a bottle, and then they give us multiple pages of all the possible things which can go wrong. You know, there's not one drug you'll get from a pharmacy which does not come with this long list of possible things which can go wrong. But when you talk about a compound like curcumin, you don't get that sheet along with whenever you buy the supplement, because it is extremely safe, which makes it a lot more beautiful. Because, and I tell that most people, you know, when you're going to try it, one thing I can say to you for sure, that it is not going to hurt you. That makes it a lot more important, because if something is not going to hurt you, whether or not it's going to help you, that's going to depend upon every individual. But if you know for sure that trying this is not going to hurt you, there's very little or almost no possibility of that happening. I think people try it with a lot more comfort and confidence, and then they find out on their own that trying it for a few weeks or months has really helped them. But we can't say that for any modern drugs we use.
Right. So can we talk a little bit about the role of curcumin with depression and the study that you did showing that it outperformed Prozac, which I don't really think is an effective drug anyway.
Yes.
But we won't go there. But, so what do we need to know about depression and inflammation and the role of curcumin?
Sure. So I think when we first did the study, it was quite interesting because most people, when we talk about depression, they don't relate depression to inflammation because, again, for the most lay audience or people who are not in the scientific world, they always, when they think about inflammation, they always are actually thinking about acute inflammation, which makes sense. But what we just talked, we covered earlier today, chronic inflammation is the root cause of many diseases, and it is also one of the important causes for depression. And there are preclinical studies done which have shown that people who are chronically depressed, you know, they have quite a large contribution of chronic inflammation. And when these people are depressed, what happens is the process of neurogenesis, so that's a word we use for explaining that in our brain, new brain cells are formed all the time. So they should get formed all, because every cell in our body gets replaced, has a finite lifespan. So every cell in our body dies, and a new cell takes place of the old cell. So, but what happens is people who are chronically depressed, this process of formation or synthesis or generation of new brain cells slows down. So when that happens, all the neurotransmitters, all the neurochemicals, serotonin, epinephrine, norepinephrine, all of these chemicals, it creates an imbalance, and people are chronically, you know, feeling low and down. So That's a loop which continues. You're depressed, and then neurogenesis slows down, and you have a constant imbalance of all these neurotransmitters in your brain. And preclinical studies have shown that, and what happens in these conditions, we take drugs such as Prozac, and what these drugs are essentially doing, as you know, these drugs fall into the category of SSRIs, which means selective serotonin receptor inhibitors. So what these drugs are doing is when a patient feels low, they take a drug. So what these drugs are essentially doing is they're basically managing adequate or at the best level they can of serotonin in the brain so that the patient feels a little bit uplifted. So it's basically managing the levels of your existing neurotransmitters. In contrast, when you take curcumin does two things. One, as soon as you take curcumin, it actually speeds up. It enhances the process of neurogenesis, which is beautiful because what it's doing is what should have been happening in the first place. It increases the speed or the rate of how your new brain cells are formed. So your SSRIs don't do that. They are simply controlling the levels of existing neurotransmitters in your brain. But what curcumin does is it helps formation of new brain cells. Every time a new brain cell is formed, it's going to produce the more amount of neurotransmitters and all that. So it's basically not managing, but treating the symptoms, underlying symptoms of depression. And the second thing is, again, like I said, it's not just enhancing the level of neurogenesis and maintaining better levels of neurotransmitters. And the biggest thing is no side effects. When you take these drugs such as Prozac, you have to virtually take these drugs for rest of your life. And what happens is, just like we talked about chemotherapy earlier, you take one of these SSRIs for some period of time. After a few months or a year, you'll stop responding to that, and then you have to keep switching drugs, and you are dependent on these drugs for rest of your lifetime. And when you take these drugs for long periods of time, each one of these drugs have serious side effects, adverse effects associated with them, and that continues to perpetuate the cycle. People are never feeling good because either they're not responding to these drugs or there are other side effects. But when you take curcumin, it really takes care of that. So what we did in this study was it was a three-arm study where we gave patients who were chronically depressed, we gave them either curcumin, 500 milligrams twice a day, of a very special extract of curcumin, which I've been working on for a long time, called BCM95. So we gave these patients 500 milligrams BCM95 curcumin twice a day, very small amount of curcumin, just 1 gram a day. Or we gave them the standard of care drugs such as Prozac. And in the third arm, we gave them the combination of two. So the idea was, let's see how well curcumin does compared to Prozac. We know that Prozac works, at least people feel better. So it was a very short study. It was a six-week long study. And what we noticed at the end of the study was that the patients who took curcumin or Prozac, they both did equally well. That was fascinating because if curcumin can perform as well as Prozac, this is huge because curcumin is dirt cheap. It is very inexpensive. It has no side effects, and it is not just managing your symptoms, but it is treating you for your depression. So we are very, very excited about this study that curcumin can work as efficiently as Prozac. And in the combination arm, we really didn't see too much more added benefit. We were hoping probably there would be some sort of synergy between the two, but no. But the good news was that curcumin is very safe, and it worked as beautifully as Prozac.
Now, if it helps to produce neurogenesis of brain cells, it seems to me the next logical step is that it's going to support optimal brain function.
Absolutely, absolutely, and that's something we are following up now. So that first study we published, that was a very short study because that was the first study of its type ever done, and to do these studies, you need blessing from FDA because there's no other human evidence out there. But now, based on that study and the excitement there, that if curcumin can do what it showed in that six-week-long study, now we are following up on that study with a much longer study where we will probably study effects not of just depression but other brain functions as well. And we expect that since it is helping neurogenesis and other things, it's going to help with brain function as well, cognition and other things too, yes.
And that's such a huge and looming epidemic right now in our culture, probably in other places around the world, you know, the concern of dementia and Alzheimer's, and which is now being recognized as an inflammatory condition as well.
Yes, absolutely, and that's part of the reason I'm involved in multiple human clinical trials currently being done on patients with dementia, which is essentially considered as a precursor for Alzheimer's. And so we are doing human clinical trials on patients with dementia, patients who have Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and we don't have fully completed studies to give you a summarized version of it, but the evidence we have seen so far is that curcumin has the ability to help patients who have dementia, people who have Parkinson's, and Alzheimer's. So we are very excited, and we hope that we can finish these studies soon and publish and share these findings with everyone.
So do you think then that the epidemic, this growing epidemic of Alzheimer's, is just another expression of how we have created a society that just fuels chronic inflammation in our bodies?
I absolutely think so. And I think you said it very beautifully earlier today that a lot of the disease we have around us is essentially the lifestyles and things we do and the epidemic we have created for ourselves. And I think, like I said, I mean, it was always very, very, when I first got into this field, it was very puzzling to me, and I gave you the stats before in terms of disease incidence between U.S. and India. But it's true that, you know, we live in a country like U.S. where we have the best minds, you know. We have the smartest people. We have the smartest technology. We have the best infrastructure. But in spite of having everything good, you know, we have one thing which is problematic. If you look at U.S., we have the highest incidence of virtually every disease, whether it's we're talking about cancer, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, any disease. We have the highest incidence of every single disease in this country, which is a conundrum, which is a paradox. Why? I mean, we have the best minds, we have the best infrastructure, we have the best, in some ways, healthcare systems and all that, access to healthcare system and so forth. But still, we have this epidemic, and this is essentially because of the epidemic we have created ourselves, the foods we eat all day long, the processed foods we eat, the amount of calories we eat, the amount of not just calories, the amount of empty calories we eat. You know, by empty, I mean there's no nutritional benefit. We're just eating processed foods, foods which really have no real nutrition, but they are just, you know, loaded with sugars and oils and fats and so forth. So, yes, I mean, It's easier said than done. I mean, we're not going to be able to change this epidemic overnight. But one thing we can do is to counterbalance those effects of the epidemic we have created, we should strongly consider taking some of these supplements because they have the ability to offset some of these adverse dietary and lifestyle habits we have developed. And I'm hoping that probably more and more people are recognizing, a lot of people are converting to being vegan and so forth. And so I think that's a good change that people are beginning to recognize that a lot of the things we can, a lot of the disease we can prevent by making more prudent, more smarter dietary and lifestyle choices. But until that happens, I think we should consider taking some of these supplements which can help us stay healthier. Yes.
Well, I think, you know, it's like the wisdom of Ayurvedic medicine that has used curcumin for, you know, thousands of years. It's because the aging process in itself is pro-inflammatory. So if you want to have a healthy, you know, aging life, you have to do things that are going to reduce the natural tendency to be inflamed and reverse that. So again, that to me, you know, curcumin comes into play as part of an anti-aging program as well.
Absolutely. And like I said, I mean, we are living longer now because that's how we have helped ourselves. I mean, in terms of technology, in terms of advances in medicine, we are living longer. But at the same time, living longer means it comes with a price that if we don't make good choices, we are constantly under some level of chronic inflammation, and we need to be mindful of that. And some of these choices in terms of supplements or diets which have these anti-inflammatory components to them, I think they are extremely important and we must recognize. And the good thing, like I said before, you need to consider, one must consider, are these compounds safe? The answer is yes. Are these compounds affordable? The answer is they are extremely affordable compared to the very expensive medications we take on a daily basis. A lot of us do. And most of the medications we take, they are like one medication, one disease, you know, one target, one disease. But the beauty of taking curcumin, we have already covered in this conversation that we know that curcumin helps with patients with cancer, curcumin helps in patients with dementia, depression, arthritis, so forth. So you can think of taking this supplement not just for one purpose, but if you're taking it even for Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, cancer, it is going to heal you on so many other levels that it is a good, wholesome natural supplement, which is very safe, very affordable.
Absolutely. So the question I have is, first of all, what's the best form of curcumin? You know, curcumin is getting really popular, and there are all sorts of supplements out there. But I know that there has to be a right type of curcumin or right formulation with curcumin to allow it to really be absorbed past the cell membrane, correct? So
yes.
Is that my correct?
Absolutely. So no, I think you're spot on with this too. So as good as curcumin is, one of the challenges with curcumin and many other natural botanicals are they are not water soluble. So what that means is we cannot absorb them as efficiently. So they're poor absorption, and that's the same challenge with curcumin. But when you take curcumin, like I said, historically, people in India and other places, and that's something we have learned now, you know, the Ayurvedic way of consuming curcumin was you take a spoonful of turmeric. At that time, people were not extracting curcumin, but they knew that this spice works. So anytime you have any sort of health concern, you have a cough, you have body aches or anything, what the traditional way, which is still being used in India, and I know that my grandma would do it all the time. So the way you consume turmeric is you take a spoonful of turmeric and you take a warm or lukewarm cup of milk and you just stir in a spoonful of turmeric and you gulp it down, and it worked every single time. But if you take the same spoonful of turmeric curcumin and you mix in a glass of water, it won't dissolve and it won't give you the benefit. And nobody understood why, but now we do. The reason is when you take curcumin and you coat it with certain lipids or certain fats, it allows for better absorption. So going back to this Ayurvedic principles, now people have started to find modern ways of improving absorption of curcumin. So the answer to your question, is there a difference in curcumin preparations which are out there in the market? The answer is yes. There are so many different preparations, and I cannot tell you which one is the best because I've not compared many of them head-to-head myself, but for the last many, many years, I have used in my research a very specific form of curcumin called BCM95. And the reason I choose this curcumin in my science is because it has been shown that BCM95 has anywhere between 7 to 10 times higher absorption compared to standard curcumin, which is fantastic because if you're going to absorb it 7 to 10 times more, you're going to have that much more benefit compared to standard curcumin. Not only that, it retains in the body longer, so which means mostly when you take curcumin within 2 hours, most of the curcumin is metabolized and it comes out in feces or urine. But for this curcumin, it has been shown that it stays in the body longer. We don't fully understand why. And third thing is, it is all natural, and this is very, very important. You asked me in the beginning, is turmeric better or curcumin? My answer was turmeric is also good, but the problem is it's not practical because we can't take enough of it. So the way this BCM95 curcumin is prepared and the way most of the curcumins are prepared, you ground up turmeric powder and then use certain chemicals. You extract that 2 to 4% curcumin, which is present in turmeric powder, and then to enhance its absorption, a lot of the companies, what they do is they take curcumin and then they coat some sort of lipids on it. Some call it phytosomes, some call it nanoparticles. So what they do is they basically coat this curcumin with some sort of synthetic lipids and then they sell it, which is probably fine because it helps improve absorption of curcumin. But we do not know what happens when you take these artificial synthetic lipids. If you take these curcumins for long periods of time, only time will tell us if there are any side effects associated. But with BCM95, the reason I chose it, what they do is they extract curcumin from turmeric and then they use essential oils which are present in turmeric, the essential turmeric oils, and they put back the turmeric oils which were part of the root itself and they coat it with that. So rather than using any artificial outside synthetic lipid, they actually blend the extracted curcumin back with the natural oils which were present in the plant turmeric itself, so which makes it all natural. So those are all the reasons I've used BCM95 in my research.
So you want someone to, if they're going to look for a product, see if their curcumin in the product says it's
BCM95.
Yeah. And what is the recommended dose you think would work best for people, or what are the range of doses depending on conditions?
Yes. So, again, I mean, in terms of if you're taking it as a supplement and there's no empirical, there's no super clear way of knowing what is the – but the way I always recommend or count it based on science, and like I told you, a typical Indian meal, people use turmeric as a spice, and you get about 100 milligrams of curcumin in each meal. So if you're taking consuming three meals a day, so you're taking about 200 to 300 milligrams of curcumin every day. So as a general preventative health supplement, I would say a health supplement of 200 to 500 milligrams is plenty enough. I know a lot of people feel that since it is safe, they can take a lot more, but that's their personal choice. But I would say that as a general health supplement, 200 to 500 milligrams curcumin is more than plenty. But people who already have some sort of disease or they're trying to fight some disease, cancer, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, dementia, since it is extremely safe, in my studies I've used gram or 1.5 gram. So I think between 1 to 2 gram is probably plenty enough, again, for specific conditions. Although at least 2 human trials have been done where people were given, these were dose escalation studies where they were testing that, is there any sort of toxicity or side effect associated with curcumin? So in these studies, people were given up to 12 grams, which is a boatload of curcumin, you know. People were given 12 grams of curcumin every day for 6 months, and virtually there was no toxicity. So the point being, it is extremely safe. You can consume up to 12 grams, but I would not recommend doing that. So I think if you're healthy enough, as a supplement, 200 to 500 milligrams is enough. But if you're using it for specific health conditions, maybe going up to 1, 2, 3 grams is more than enough.
Well, that's great information. I mean, it's really wonderful to know that you really can't overdose on this supplement.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure we can. I mean, there's no such thing as safe. You can kill yourself by consuming too much water. You know, water is healthy for you. So same thing. I mean, if you overdo anything, it's a matter of time. We need to wait for the evidence. But that's why, as a scientist, I prefer to be safe rather than let's push the limits. So I think it's better to stay on the lower limits and something where we have enough science to support it.
But it's just important for people to know that it is
yes.
a safe supplement. It's,
absolutely.
It's a safe ingredient to be taking. It's beneficial, and it's not going to lead to any harm by taking
absolutely.
It at all. So, gosh, we've covered so much territory. I think if my listeners are not convinced that curcumin should be part of their daily regimen, I don't know what else we can do. I take it daily.
Yes.
I've been taking it for quite a while now, and I see it as part of the, you know, fundamentals, one of the core of my protocol that I take every day. And it really does work. Whenever I've injured myself or sprained
yes.
something, you know, I just go for curcumin, and it's amazing. The next day, I'm fine. So
absolutely.
I wouldn't be without it.
No, I mean, I take it myself. I've been living it for now close to 20 years, and my diet is not typical Indian diet, what I used to when I lived in India. So I knew that it helped me all along. I'm now in my late 40s, and I'm very healthy, and I take curcumin supplement every day. I have two little kids, and I give it to them every day, and my wife. So I believe that it is a good, safe, healthy choice to be taking. So I think it's a very, very safe. I think safety, to me, again, comes back over and over. Since it is so safe, since it is so affordable, it is worth a try, and it has. I have felt it, and I have known so many friends and family and people who reach out to me all day long. They have tried it. They all feel the benefit. So,
well, I just want to thank you for your dedication in taking on this cause. And at this point, 20 years down the track, have become so much so popular, and people really wanting to learn more and finding that the work you've been doing, the research with curcumin, is making it into the mainstream to help so many people. So I'm sure all of us who benefited from curcumin are very grateful to you, Dr.
Well, thank
Boyle.
Thank you so much. And I feel blessed that I chose to go this route, and I want to acknowledge that it has just not been me, but it's been a team effort. I learn a lot from people I talk to whenever I give lectures and so forth, and all of that has really motivated me in a positive way to continue doing what I've been doing, and really, truly, it has been a team effort, and I hope I can continue to unravel some of the other mysteries or questions people have around it in the next few years, and I'm very, very excited where we are, and I'm hoping that we use curcumin as one of the examples that how some of these natural botanicals and herbs have this medicinal value attached to them, and I'm hoping that we begin to recognize that, we start using some of these things and probably others for which we have enough science, and hopefully we can all turn this around and get rid of this epidemic and probably live healthier and longer and prevent a lot of the disease which we have around us.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom with us today.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it. Thanks.
It's been a pleasure. And thank you, my listeners, for tuning in again. I really appreciate you being here with me. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.